January 14th, 2018. So last week we talked about this in regards to Talmud Torah. We talked about the ability to tap into yourself through the study of Torah. It means that what we were suggesting was you study the Torah, you learn the Torah, you delve into it enough, you learn about yourself, and in tandem, you learn about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. So what that, to a certain extent, opened us up to is this a possibility and reality of Talmud Torah being more than just the raw words and the stale words, rather, that are typed or written out on the page in front of you. And it's intuitive in that respect. Of course it's more than that. But I wanted to only develop it further in our last class here on Hilchot Talmud Torah. So the class will begin here with the question of Tosafot Masechet Berachot Daf Yod Aleph Amud Bet. So Tosafot have the following very simple question. The Gemara over there is talking about Birkot HaTorah. Ask Tosafot, how come we make, many of us, says Tosafot, Birkot HaTorah early in the morning, right? Those three Birachot we have in the morning, we say, Sfaradim say Al Divrei Torah, Ashkenazim say La'asot B'Divrei Torah, Ve'ha'arevna, Nasher La'harbanu, those Birachot, Birkot HaTorah, and then we'll pause and involve ourselves in our business, and our family needs, and anything else we do over the course of the day, and then we come back to study Torah, we don't make berachot again. Why not? When you do a mitzvah, and you have a pause in the middle, and you come back to do the mitzvah, you make a beracha again. How come when it comes to Talmud Torah, it's not that way? That's the question of Tosafot. So I'm here in the first source, on the third line, answers Tosafot, V'yesh lomar, and Tosafot likens it, as a matter of fact, to Sukkah. It says you sat in the Sukkah, and you ate, and then you went out, and came back to eat another meal. In the same day, you make another bracha. Why is Talmud Torah different? V'yesh lomar deshane Torah. Torah is different. She'eno miyaesh da'ato. You never, your mind and your thoughts are never taken off of it. Dekol sha'a adam mechuyav lilmod. Because after all, you're obligated to learn at all times. Dichtiv v'hachita bo yomam v'alayla. V'haveh, and therefore, since there's that obligation, and therefore your mind is on it, hang on. It's as if you're sitting and studying all day without any stop, any pause. It says when it comes to Sukkah, there are specific times during which we eat on a regular basis. That's the answer of Tosafot. Go ahead, Avi.
Yeah, but for Sukkah, the mitzvah was not even only eating. I mean, this is coming from more from Ashkenazi view. But I think that it's really dwelling in the Sukkah.
That would only strengthen the question. The fact that we say it more than once in Sukkah would only strengthen the question. If it's really just about dwelling throughout the day, so how can we say it every time we get to the Sukkah?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the mitzvah is dwelling.
Understood, but again, so it only strengthens the question.
Yeah.
So Tosafot responds, however, that when it comes to Talmud Torah, there's something qualitatively different about this mitzvah in which it subsumes your activities of the day. But it doesn't. Many of us will make the berachot in the morning and not think words of Torah throughout the day. And believe it or not, this was the reality 800 years ago as well. This is not a reality which changed. And nonetheless, from a halachic perspective, this is Rabbeinu Tam's suggestion. In fact, just from a strict halacha back and forth perspective, shakla v'tariya perspective, Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, which is one of the mifarshim, and it's actually finds its way to the back of the Gemara, Masechet Berachot, asked a simple question. It's okay, you gave us a great answer. That's something that's mitmashech, something that continues throughout the day. What about talet? What about tefillin? Talet and tefillin for men is obligatory throughout the day. Now, if you were to, for example, this is how we go la halakha. For example, if you took off your tefillin and went to the bathroom, a man, and you come back to put them back on, you make another beracha. Talet not that way, although Shulchan Aruch says to do it that way with talet as well. Everyone agrees if you have what's called heseh hadat, if you take your mind off of them, so there's no question, there's no dispute that you have to make another beracha. But those are mitzvot that continue throughout the day as well. So in other words, even if you'll make an argument, which Avi doesn't like about the distinction between Sukkah and the Talmud Torah, when it comes to Sisit and Tefillin, they shouldn't be any different than Torah.
But you won't make another Talmud Torah even if you take a nap.
You will not?
But
Halacha is
that you had your mind on it.
Okay, that's a fantastic question. Same question. I mean, so that's the question on Tosafot. So that's the first issue we want to deal with, just to try to understand what Tosafot is talking about and their response over here, what the depth of their answer, and in turn to understand that not only from a halakha perspective, but of course from a hashkafa one as well. Next issue. Harambam writes in Perek Gimel v'Hilchot Talmud Torah Halakha Dalet. And this halakha in Harambam is based on Gemara Masech Moed Katan and Daf Tet. This is the following: Hayalifanav Asiyat Misva v'Talmud Torah. It says you have the in front of you, lying in front of you, the opportunity to study Torah or to do a mitzvah. Im efshar la mitzvah lehe'asot ayde achirim. If it's possible for that mitzvah to be fulfilled by someone else, in other words, you're not. It's not a mitzvah that's specifically incumbent upon you. It's something about helping another person, and you could call your friend to do it instead. Lo yafsik talmudo, you shouldn't pause from study of Torah. Ve'im lav, what if not? Ya'aseh ha-mitzvah ve'achzor le-torato, you should stop your study of Torah, go perform the mitzvah, and only then resume the Torah that you presumably began with. That's the statement of Harambam. Quite straightforward. There's a glaring difficulty with it, though. The principle throughout halakha goes as follows: Ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. If you're involved in a mitzvah, you don't need to, and according to some opinions, you're not allowed to stop and pause doing that mitzvah in order to go deal with another mitzvah. So I'm in the middle of, sitting in the sukkah and being mekayem my mitzvah on the first night of Sukkot, and someone comes and tells me that there's another mitzvah to be done. I do not, and maybe may not, pause my mitzvah in order to go do so. When it comes to Talmud Torah, which is all the mitzvot shkulot keneged Talmud Torah, or the Torah is shakul keneged kol ha-mitzvot. We say that you pause the study of Torah.
Torah you study to do asiyah, so you're supposed to do the mitzvot.
So, well, we know that there are many exceptions to that. They can make you laugh, they can make mitzvah, there are exceptions.
I understand each one of them needs an explanation. So we'll deal right now with Talmud Torah. Jack says, well, when it comes to Talmud Torah, the purpose of Talmud Torah is l'lmod al minat la'asot. You're supposed to be studying in order to perform. So if you're supposed to be studying in order to perform, so he says, how could you not stop the Talmud Torah and go do that? Now, when I'm performing that other mitzvah, am I still in the midst of Talmud Torah, or have I paused my study of Torah?
I say you're still in it.
Okay, so let's read from Me'iri, source number 4. I mean, I like your argument, you just have to explain it. So it writes Me'iri in source number 4. Me'iri, of course, being a medieval rabbi who lived where, Mark? In Provence, of course. Ve'afal pi she'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. This is, although in general, this is our principle. Lo ne'emar ken b'talmud Torah. We wouldn't and do not apply this talmud Torah. Ho'il ve'ikara li yedi'at kiyum she'ar mitzvot. When it comes down to it, purpose is in order to perform mitzvot. Mevatelin ota b'shvil kol mitzvah she'yefshar lekayimah lidei acherim. Kachi shitat gedolei ha'mefarshim, says Meiri, the purpose is to perform, and as such, mevatelin. His lashon mevatelin seems to suggest that we stop it and we pause its performance. Is it perforce what he means? Not necessarily, but that's certainly his argument. Similarly, although from a different direction, this book, source number 5, Kobes He'arot. Kobes He'arot is written by a rabbi whose name was Rabbi Wasserman, Rabbi Elchanan Bunim Wasserman. He was killed at the outbreak of the Holocaust. He was a student of Hafetz Chaim, of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. He was the head of Yeshivat Baranovich, which was actually a high school, but has many famed students that emanated from it. So he writes this book, Kobetz He'arot, actually on Masechet Yevamot, and he encompasses many other issues over the course of the book. And so one of them, and he's actually responding in this, as do several others, to a rabbi, well, it was a student at the time, a person who later became known as Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Rabbi Shimon Schwab was he stood at the head of the Breuer's congregation in Washington Heights for many years. As a matter of fact, when my parents lived in Washington Heights, he was the presiding rabbi. So here's Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who grew up in Germany. And that's how he made his way to the German community in Washington Heights. Grows up in Germany, and Germany in the early 1900s was much more secular, much more cultured than the rest of ghettoized, shtetlized Europe. And as such, he was much more enlightened. He then has some sort of spark in terms of his approach matters, and makes his way to Yeshivat Mir. As he's in Yeshivat Mir, he starts to have a crisis of sorts in which he says, my upbringing was one of Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and a certain approach of Torah im Derech Eretz, some sort of balance between Torah and involvement with the world and study and all that sort of stuff. He says, but now I'm being preached different thoughts, being preached different approaches to matters. So he writes to many of the Gedolei Israel at the time. It's a fascinating thing to look at these letters and the responses in each one of them. You're dealing with a reality, a society prior to Holocaust, so the circumstances were different. But you're also dealing with, you know, a core issue which is being addressed by a person who's actually interested and being responded to. So each one of the questions, each one of the answers are interesting in their own respect. This one, he gets into a halachic debate in the middle of it, and he writes, Nir'ah. Dehad tzarich levatel mitamut Torah b'shvil kiyum mitzvah, en hata'a mishum de mitzvah tamut Torah nithet mipenei kiyum ha-mitzvah. This is when I stop Talmud Torah in order to perform another mitzvah. It's not because I've pushed aside Talmud Torah in order to perform the next one. Deha mitzvah Talmud Torah gedola mikol ha-mitzvot says it's impossible to suggest that that's what I would do. You don't push aside something that's greater than the next one for it. Ela de kemo shemutar levatel Talmud Torah mipenei derech eretz v'chol sorchei adam ha-hechrechim. He says, however, the understanding must be the same way that you have to have a livelihood and you have to pursue a career in which you're going to be able to support for yourself and your family. Now, what are you doing in that circumstance? Are you pushing aside Talmud Torah in order to take care of those matters? So you're not. In the moments when you're working appropriately, when you're sustaining yourself and your family, there's no Chovat Talmud Torah, argues Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. He says that the concept over here is not one in which I push aside, it's a concept of pitur, exemption. In the moment in which there's a mitzvah in front of me to perform, I'm exempt from Talmud Torah. In the moment when I'm involved in my business or in my clinic or whatever I'm involved in, I'm exempt from Talmud Torah. So again, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has this argument of Talmud Torah being different, for a similar reason to Jack's suggestion of you need to perform in order to, you know, fulfill Torah. But when it comes down to it, when I'm doing those mitzvot, when I'm pursuing a career, am I in the midst of studying Torah? I'm not. I'm exempt from Torah at that time period. That's his argument. What's that? He was very Haredi, indeed. And this approach is a very Haredi approach, no question. But listen, there's a certain openness and understanding that you'll need to pursue, but you're right. As you're pursuing, he says you're exempt. Yeah? No question?
There's that argument, you need to say another beracha. You're not exempt, you're not on there anymore, you're not concentrating
on it. Right. So based on the argument of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, he'd need to have a different answer to the question of Tosafot. No question. Maybe even according to Meiri, arguably as well. Their approaches are not ones in which you're involved constantly. Okay, so all this being our backdrop, we now endeavor further to try to understand, so what is taking place and how are we to envision our lives outside or aside from the book in front of you, or the the class playing in your ears, or but whatever the circumstance of, or the thoughts directly related to Torah. So there's this well-known Gemara Masechet Menachot here in source 6. Gemara Masechet Menachot Daf Saditet. Here's the statement: Amar Esh Lakish Pe'amim. Sometimes Shebitula Shel Torah Zehu Yesoda. It says sometimes the bitul, the annulment?
Stopping.
Okay. The stopping of Torah is its yesod, is its foundation. Strange. Sometimes by stopping Torah, you build its foundation. We haven't explained. Dichtiv. What? It's an agadah.
Stopping
learning. Okay. Dichtiv. Asher Shibarta. Who said that to whom? God says to Moshe. Okay. Amalu HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Yiyasher Kochacha SheShabarta. He says, Mabruk, good job, Hazaku Baruch, that you broke the tablets. Now, what sort of derasha is that? Where does God say Yiyasher Kochacha? So Rashi explains, the understanding is, well, he didn't get angry at him. He says, you look at the tablets which you smashed. There's no anger mentioned in Parashat Ki Tisa or elsewhere in the Torah in which God gets angry at him. So it seems to be an implicit, statement from God in terms of saying it's appropriate. Now, what does that mean? I mean, why was it appropriate, and and how are we to apply this to sometimes bitul Torah being great, just as good, or building the foundations of Torah? Says Rashi, I'll give you examples. I'll give you the examples Avi cited earlier. Says Rashi, kigon shemevatel Torah lehosaat amet lachnasat kala. He says there are certain circumstances where you have to stop Torah in order to deal with a body of someone who deceased, in order to deal with mesameh hatan mekala. Under those circumstances, pausing the Torah, zehu yesoda. What does it mean, zehu yesoda? Continues Rashi, zehu yesoda kilomar. In other words, mekabel sachar, your reward in such circumstances, ki ilu yoshev umiyaseda ve'osekba. Says Rashi, it's as if in those moments when you're involved in those other endeavors, as if you're involved at that time in the study of Torah. Well, why am I involved in those moments in the study of Torah? I mean, quite the opposite. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman certainly wouldn't be making this argument. Would Meiri be making this argument? How do we understand that? This certainly will link into our initial question from Tosafot. In terms of the entire day, even when I'm not directly involved with Torah, Rashi is quarantining this to specifically Mitzvot. But even in the engagement in Mitzvot, how am I involved in learning Torah as I'm involved with the Mitzvot? In what way?
Well, that's much broader, because I think it's not just about studying. It's kiyum, it's osek, it's living a life of Torah, it's a derech. It's not just about studying, so it's a broad term. So if you're living Torah by doing all those components, you're constantly in the state of Torah.
Right, so I agree, it's a nice thought, but are you really involved in study of Torah?
The whole purpose of Torah is to attach to God.
So you can argue, I want you to argue this, don't get me wrong, we'll end with you, but I mean, the strict argument is Torah is cognitive, is a cognitive approach.
It strict learning, yes.
But what is it when it comes down to it? In other words, you could tell me you're living a life of Torah, fantastic. Are you studying Torah?
It's as if you're studying it because you're Mekayim Torah. It's the result. What's the purpose of Torah?
It's the application.
It might be the application of what you learn, but it's not. In other words, let me give you the following example. Let's say I build a sukkah. So when I'm building the sukkah, so I'm preparing it for sitting in the sukkah. Now, two separate matters. One was preparing me for it, and one is the performance of it. So if you tell me the mitzvot or my life,
if I'm in business and I'm dealing appropriately and honestly, that's Torah. Not even talking about sukkah. If I'm living, I didn't say it's limud. I said it's Torah and it's broadest.
We're talking about the Torah.
It's a learning, because when you study Torah, anyway, there are many different rules for each mitzvah that you're reading. So if you don't practice, how are you gonna know what are the situation that can happen to you? Every book of Halakha is written on after practicing, after seeing what the problems are.
Yes.
After applying.
Well, let's say I don't encounter. Let's say I don't actively engage in that. Let's say I'm at a ball game and I'm not thinking about Torah or how it applies to me sitting in this seat or to the ramification of that.
Yeah, but that's not. It's still not possible.
So the strict argument is this is not quantifiable. This is not Talmud Torah. How's it Talmud Torah?
It's still, even the downtime is Torah. Your sleep is Torah. Because you're energizing your body.
I understand your passion, and I appreciate your passion. I'm just asking you to hear it from a rational perspective. In other words, you'll have to broaden your perspective or your hagdara, your definition of what Talmud Torah is, and I need you to explain to me how that is. So you're just saying it's a life. I don't know. What do you mean it's a life?
The metaphor is a doctor, right? So they go to medical school, they learn medicine. But then every patient that they see afterwards, every test that they run, every diagnosis they do, every treatment that they administer is a continuation of their medical education. It's seeing, did this work? Is this the right dose? In this situation, do I do this? In this situation, do I do that? It's the same thing with Torah and with life. Let's say something like how you raised your children, right?
Would any doctor argue, if you asked them, said, when you went through your day, were you studying the law? Were you studying medicine today? They're not going to say they were studying medicine.
Were you learning medicine today? They would say yes.
No, they wouldn't.
Ask him.
Do you learn medicine? You don't learn medicine during the day. They might be thinking about it, but that's not learning it. They might be applying it.
You
want
to go out there, you apply, you want to learn from that.
I've been in practice for a year. They'll say, I don't know, I haven't looked at this in a year. It's the same thing. They're not up to speed on it.
I understand, but what I'm saying is Talmud Torah needs to have some definition for us to be able to apply it. I like the passion, and I want us to live this type of lifestyle in which we envision everything through the prism of I'm studying Torah, not just living, but I need some way to do so. Anyway, so let's move. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a machloket between Ritva and Ran, generally cited like that. Masechet Sukkah Daf Chafeh. What? Machloket Rishonim, yeah. All right, anyway, so here, let's just move a little bit further. Rav Huttner here in Source 7 and Source 8, in Pahad Yitzchak, a book that we've dealt with many a time. So in his book on Shavuot here in Ma'amar He, okay. So it says here, Ubarur the Kavanat Hashasi, Tehare Hachta Amrinan de Bitula Zeu Kiuma, Hakavanahi Lomar, the Dinad Mevatelin Talmud Torah Mipne Hachnasat Kala, and Perusho the Misfat Talmud Torah Nitheti Mipne Kiumim Halalo. So he's reflecting and he's highlighting the words of Rashi, and he says, it can't be, or it's not, that when I'm involved in these mitzvot, I've pushed aside Torah. He says, this is the kiyum of Torah. Now, he has a fascinating approach, although, and I'll repeat again, Jack, he's not going to, in my mind, sufficiently explain it. He'll be able to prove it. I don't think he sufficiently explains it, which is generally not our lacking with Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner is wonderful at getting to the core of issues. It's generally, the person who today is going to explain it for us, it's generally his issue. The Briskers and Rabbi Soloveitchik, generally they'll be able to give you a conceptual understanding of it, but to get to the core and the underpinnings, they won't be able to go that deep. They'll leave that the whys up in the air. Rav Huttner, I don't think, gets to the why. But what is his further proof of this matter? He says, well, look at where Rashi come from. Well, Rashi seems to be not Peshat of the Gemara. He says, well, look at the Derasha of Resh Lakish. He says, the Derasha of Resh Lakish goes as follows. God commends Moshe for breaking the Luhot. It means that the statement of the Bitul being the Yesod, the foundation for the Talmud, is learned from God's commending Moshe for breaking the Luhot, not for the outcome of whatever happened as a result of breaking the Luhot. In other words, the statement of God in which he says, you did a wonderful job, and in turn Resh Lakish says, well, that was Talmud Torah, or that was the foundation of Talmud Torah, is the breaking, not what came forth from the breaking. In other words, it means to say that even when I'm involved in, quote, the Bitul, that is the kiyum. So to read it in Rav Huttner, he says, "Uleze mevira ayam Resh Lakish dehayasher koach haya al maaseh hashvira." It's on the breaking. V'ma ya'inyan de Moshe hitil le'atma shvira b'torat dechiyah. If maybe Moshe said, "Well, listen, I need a certain outcome. I need to change the people's perspective, and as such, I'm allowed to break this right now in order to uphold what's going to take place in the future." Well, then the statement of God would not be, "I commend you for doing so." It's that it was permitted for you to do so. The commending for the breaking, he says, "Hayasher koach ba'al maaseh shevira." And he says, for example, if a person were to wear, so the halakha is we're not allowed to wear a sha'adnez, we're not allowed to wear kila'im, sha'adnez. Not allowed to have semir u'pishtim, what's that, wool and linen together. So you're not allowed to have them mixed together in your garment. However, if a man or a woman, I believe as well, is wearing tzitziot, so the halakha would be that it's permitted. That's the derasha of the chachamim, that they're permitted under such circumstances with the mitzvah. Now, in such a circumstance, says Rav Huttner, he says, what would the yasher koach be? If I walk up to you and I see you're wearing sha'adnez tzitzit, and I say, great job. What's the great job for? That you're wearing tzitzit. No. It would be that you're wearing tzitzit. It wouldn't be for the shadnez. The shadnez is permitted while you're wearing tzitzit.
That's the result.
But what am I commending you for? For the tzitzit. I'm not commending you for shadnez.
That's not shevirah.
That's exactly the point. Says Rav Huttner, the shevirah of these luhot That's what he's being commended for. It means in the actual Shevirah, in the Bitul Torah, there's something commendable in those moments as well. It's not just that it sets forth a reality which is good, which is... The statement here goes as follows. Here's his mashal, right? If you're wearing the sisiot and you have sha'atnez in them, when I commend you, it's for sisit, not for the sha'atnez. Sha'atnez was permitted for the sisit. If you broke the tablets in order to establish a certain understanding for the people, what am I commending you for?
Establish.
For the establishing. What did God commend him for? Shvira. For the Shvirah. So says Rav Hunter, oh, in turn, that's what Rashi's diuk in the Gemara is. Rashi says it means that the actual bitul was not only permitted, but rather was optimal, was commended. That was Talmud Torah.
Why is the Shvirah the premise that it's bitul? Why is that?
When I break tablets that have Torah, I mean, what better example of bitul Torah can you have than destroying
it was
Torah?
Stop, it was just,
Okay.
Torah didn't stop just because he broke the tablets.
It was an instant destruction of Torah. What do you mean? I mean, what better symbolic gesture of destroying Torah can you have than burning a Sefer Torah?
I don't look at it like that. Just because if you burn something physical,
but there was no Torah at all at that. That was the only Torah at that point.
True, but I don't even think we need to go that far. I think the symbolic gesture is enough to argue that's bitul. I understand. Rish Lakish looks at the symbolic gesture and says it's fundamental.
Mark's point, so therefore what? So what's the extension?
Okay, so the extension now is something that Jack's been arguing, something that everyone's been arguing, that somehow, in some fashion, we're able to see through the non-commitment to or non-involvement in, what do we call it, physical or actual Torah. There is a kiyum and there's an involvement in Torah, which is paradoxical. Rav Huttner has proven it from an agadita. Has he done more than that? Has he explained it? He hasn't explained it. So I've proven what you guys have been arguing. But how do we make sense of this? Rav Huttner goes further in his Ma'amar Yod Gimal. So Rav Huttner is addressing...
Explain what she's saying about Rav Huttner. Is it saying the same thing?
Rav Huttner's just explaining Rashi.
Saying that when you're not actively involved in the active
move
Torah,
it still is.
Like the bitul of Torah,
no, the bitul. Yes, when you're not involved in
there, that can be a good thing.
Yes, I mean, that's what the Gemara is saying. But not only is it a good thing, it's Talmud Torah. It's not just permitted, right. It is Talmud Torah. That's what we're doing.
Because the Gemara says
yes,
it's like saying if you have something that's bitul Torah, I could be bitul Torah sometimes to promote Torah in the long run, but not always. You can't just make a general statement that every time somebody's bitul Torah, that's positive.
Well understood. A Gemara without a Perush Rashi on it, you're 100% correct. And without a mature approach to it, you're right. This can be completely distorted, no question.
Can I pick on the proof a little bit?
You can. It's not going to affect much. I mean, that's amazing. Ezra hasn't done it yet, but go ahead.
No, it's just the beginning of the Pasuk. Is Kitzolacha Shnei Luchot Avanim, right? They're already talking about the ending, meaning the effect of the Shevirah. It's not like
okay, so that's
like Moshe
pick,
destroyed
so
the
that's picking on Rish Lakish.
Yeah.
Pick on Rish Lakish, not on Rashi.
Or a little bit on Rav Huttner too.
But he's only after the fact. He's accepting the Derasha. Right. Okay, but anyway, regardless. In Source 8, Rav Huttner in his Ma'amar Yod Gimal repeats this point. It's clearly something he was passionate about. But he repeats it in different contexts, and he adds several other details to it. And one of them, for example, now this is not a proof, and it needs to be pointed out. It's not a proof, it's an application. One of them is what we were discussing earlier, right? We were discussing earlier these words of Harambam, Perek Gimal V'chot Talmud Torah, that Gemara Masechet Moed Katan, that you're allowed to, or you're supposed to, rather, if I'm studying Torah, stop the Torah in order to perform a mitzvah. Says Rav Huttner, what's that all about? Answers Rav Huttner, well, Torah is al minat la'asot. Says Rav Huttner, you want to know what that means? Yeah, sure. Go ahead. So he says, what that means is when you perform the mitzvah, it's as you're continuing your Talmud Torah. There's a logical jump there. The jump is that not necessarily. Just like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman made the argument very easily that it's a circumstance in which we say it's permitted because there's no chovah of Talmud Torah in this circumstance, it doesn't perforce mean that under such circumstances I am involved in Torah. but that's his application of the same yesod again. Again, just to piece things together for what we've done thus far, this Tosafot Masechet Berachot, and Rav Huttner is coming to answer that here in Source 8 as well. Tosafot Masechet Berachot make this argument. The reason you only make Berkot HaTorah in the morning and not every time you involve yourself with it is because there's this Chodah which is overarching and extends throughout the day. The question is, but we have many mitzvot that are that way. Obviously, there's something qualitatively different about Talmud Torah. Rav Huttner's argument in Ma'amar He, Ma'amar Yod Gimal, goes as follows. Even when I'm in, quote, the time of Bitul Torah, that is the kiyum of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. He has this Rashi in Masechet in Masechet Menachot. He has that Gimaran, which is being Medayekin. He has one or two other basic proofs for this matter. The one we just read in Source 8 is not a fantastic proof, but that's his principle. Accepting the principle. I don't know if we all want to, but it seems like everyone wants to. So what's the underpinnings of this? Why would you make such an argument? How could you make such an argument? You could say this is a life of Torah. You could say this is Rasona Torah, this is the will of the Torah. But this is studying Torah? It's not studying Torah. So my basic approach to this matter goes with Rabbi Soloveitchik's motif in many of his writings when he talks about Talmud Torah. And his motif and his stress goes as follows. Study of Torah needs to be envisioned as a process and an endeavor which extends beyond a simple cognitive apprehension. It's more than that. It's experiential. And that's the key word. That's why I even named the class, right, the experience of Talmud Torah. Now, what does that mean, it's experiential? So let's give him a chance to speak it. So here in Source 9, this Source 9 comes from this book here, right? He didn't write it himself, Shi'urei HaRav, and it's words that he said in 1973 when he finished the first Perek in Masechet Hulin. So the name of this essay is On the Love of Torah, Impromptu Remarks at a Siyum. Now, it wasn't a siyum. They finished one perek of Gemara. But this year, I took we finished a perek of Gemara, my Gemara class in Flappers, when we went to Rito's, ISIS, instead of learning the next day. And so we took a picture, and I gave it to the Flappers to put on Instagram. And so I said, well, what do you want us to write? So I said, well, it's for a siyum. So all the kids went, we didn't finish a masechet. So I said, yeah, we finished a perek. This is what I point. Okay, we could call it a siyum even when you finish a perek. What's that? We were mevatel. We were. I mean, that there is easy, right? But it doesn't mean we were learning at that time, right?
What does the word siyum mean? Complete.
Complete. But colloquially, we talk about completing an entire masechet. But correct. Anyway, so here's that is impromptu remarks. Now he's talking about this Tosafot, the same Tosafot, and he says, in a certain sense, what kedusha is for the Jew, Torah is for the Talmid Chacham. Torah should not just be an intellectual pastime. True, one can enjoy the intellectual creativity involved in Talmud Torah, but Talmud Torah should be an emotional experience as well. One should feel a tremor when engaged in it. And he continues, I put an ellipsis, just to pause for a second, if you've been with us since learning halachic man, this is very strange. This is certainly not halachic man speaking. There's no emotions for halachic man. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik when he's describing himself, and he says this explicitly in several places. He says this is a description of himself. Halachic man is my father. This is his own, and this is this book which we'll cite afterwards, right? Ubikashtem Misham, and from there you shall seek. He says that's where, and we have him saying this on tape these days, they have him saying it on, that's where I describe myself. So he, in his own engagement, was less cold and was less emotionally detached. If I were asked how an emotional experience can be had through studying the laws of, for instance, monetary fines and damages, so what would halachic man, before we continue reading, say? Halachic man would say, in that circumstance, you apply the halakha with the business deal. You know the exact halakha, and that is the experience of Torah, right? That's how he did it when you saw the spring. You knew the halachot of mikvaot, you were able to apply it. It's not what he's, I mean, the contrast is jarring. I would say that it is true that the exterior of Torah is formal and abstract. Again, halachic man would say that's what it is. But behind the shell of conceptual abstractions, there is a great fire burning, giving warmth and love. And one can love the Torah in turn with great passion. When you apprehend the Torah as a personality, not just a book, it infiltrates your emotion as well as your intellectual life. So he's been poetic so far. It's warming us up. And so that to a certain extent, this class can be used in one of two ways. It can be a fluffy class, or it can be a fundamental philosophical class. But, you know, already, I mean, this statement, all right, it's a beautiful thought, but it still hasn't really described for us. Apparently, and here's how I have him describing it, beginning to, there are two kinds of awareness according to Tosafot. The first is an acute awareness. Clearly, this is lacking when one thinks about other matters. It says awareness can be defined in two ways. Acutely, in other words, I'm engaged in words of Torah. The second is latent awareness. And this awareness is still present even though one is engaged in other matters. So he's willing right now to extend Torah and Iyun Batorah, Limud Torah, from being an acute awareness to being a latent awareness, an unconscious awareness, right? He's getting into the unconscious, and he's arguing that that's part of the experience of Torah. Now, once I've broadened Torah from being strict and specific to a cognitive endeavor, I now have broadened it to saying, well, it might not be direct either. It might be something that's lying in my subconscious. It might be something that's latent. It says, when a mother plays with her child, there's an acute awareness of the child. But even when the mother works at a job or is distracted by some other activity, there's a natural latent awareness of her child's existence. This latent awareness remains throughout her entire lifetime and can never be extinguished. It is expressed in commitment, devotion, and a feeling of identification, a feeling that she and the baby are one. The infant is the center of gravity of the parents' lives. They feel they cannot live without their child. So that's a latent awareness. If you ask the mother, his argument is, while she's in the middle of her job, while she's in the middle of, I don't know, whatever she's in the middle of, a business dealing or grocery shopping or whatever she might be doing, or in the clinic, whatever it is, are you thinking about your child? The answer should be, and probably will be, yeah, my child's always on my mind. But were you thinking, actively involved in thinking right now? No. But there's a latent awareness. The same is true with regard to Torah. There may not be acute awareness of Torah for 24 hours each day, but the latent awareness never ceases. So now Rabbi Soloveitchik is setting forth, again, an experiential dimension to Torah. How do we understand this experiential dimension? He has argued that we can broaden the definition of Torah and in turn include even the subconscious awareness of Torah. Why so? Isn't Torah about studying it? How did he decide this? It's beautiful, and you might emotionally connect to this. How did he decide this?
It's not a mental exercise. Right. He has a life. But you're right. Life. You see what Torah is. You can only, it's an experience of Torah. It's exactly what it is.
Okay, so your response to me, Jack, is, well, you know, it makes sense. I don't know if it makes sense. I'm saying. Or it feels good. It feels good. Let me rephrase it. It feels good. Feels right. I can't accept feels right. I mean, does he have a proof for such a matter?
If you have Parashat Mishpatim, right? Mm-hmm. And you have, or just like he says, finds the damages. What's the point of learning it if you're never going to apply it?
I can accept that that's what you're supposed to be doing, Robbie. But when you're doing...
That's the proof.
It's not a proof. Why learn it? Why learn it?
So that you can perform it. But when you're performing it, you're not learning.
Exactly.
Okay, good. So then you're not with him. His argument, this argument, is you're learning when you're performing.
But
because the experience is the definition of the learning, so you're learning as you're experiencing, as you're performing.
That's experiential learning.
That's correct. Correct, correct. How did he define it that way? Why isn't learning cognitive?
The problem, the issue is the learning part then.
That's how it works.
No, but the issue is the learning part. So meaning even if I'm thinking about my child, or even if I'm thinking about Torah as I'm doing something else, the definition of learning means that I'm adding knowledge where before I wasn't adding knowledge. So how could you call it Talmud Torah if you're sitting there and you're jogging down the street, right? Doesn't jog?
He has to call it Talmud Torah.
He doesn't really.
Otherwise, he can't make the berachot of Talmud Torah. Of course,
he
has to. He's in the context
of. He shies away from using the word.
It has to be. Otherwise, the berachot. Otherwise, the whole context doesn't fit.
Why did you say he's learning Torah, and now he's in the back of his mind is on the Torah? That's what he's saying, right? In the back of the mind is on the Torah. That's enough to be osek, that you don't have to repeat the berachah.
You could, that's what he's arguing. My question is, that's a very expansive and broad definition, which is, that's right.
How does he deal when he goes and falls asleep?
That's a good question.
Question? When you're sleeping, you're thinking about your child.
I imagine he would say, if you're woken up, you'd still be able to say, yeah, it was on my mind. I don't know. I don't know.
Just very simple, looking at the Berachot, you make,
yeah.
You just say a word. We don't even learn what we say. We read it to fulfill our initial, we read. We're not even learning. We say the same thing over and over again. Is there any learning going on?
With what?
When we say the Berachot.
The Berachot is not the learning. The learning is after the Berachot.
When we say after, we say the Berachot. What pasuk do we say?
By Daber, the Bekat Kohanim.
What learning did we do there?
The simple answer is I'm learning those pesukim. What do you mean?
We learned it. Did I do anything new? The argument is...
Who said learning is only something new? Learning means intellectual... comprehension.
Oh, so you bring that
so, but I'm going to go with your argument, and I'm going to, well, can you, here's the question, can you fulfill, and this will be closer to a proof without explaining it, but it'll be another proof for this matter, can you fulfill mitzvah of Talmud Torah without understanding what you're learning? I'm reading words of Torah, but I don't understand them. So I've been asked this question a lot of times. Why have I been asked this question a lot of times? Because just for example, sometimes there's a shiva and they'll give out mishnayot, right? And they'll give them out to a lot of people. And a lot of people will turn to me afterwards, can I just read these mishnayot without any understanding of it?
This is an emotional experience.
So Jack certainly would want to respond, yeah, there's an emotional experience. The answer is, in such a circumstance, that to the best of my knowledge, no posek will say that you're mekayim the mitzvah. You can't learn Torah Baal Peh without an understanding. Torah Shebichtav, there is a statement in what's called Shulchan Aruch Harav, that's the Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch, who has a real halakha work in which he makes this distinction. He says when it comes to Torah Shebichtav, there's a kiyum even when you don't understand it. In fact, and I've pointed this out, I wasn't the first, but you know, I'm excited to point this out, and I was excited to find out that others beat me to this, but in Perek Gimal V'chot Hagigah, of all places, Harambam talks about Hakel. This mitzvah Hakel was every 7 years, right, on Sukkot. The king, all of Am Yisrael would gather, and the king would read to them portions from the Torah. Writes Harambam, basing himself on sources, not in the Gemara, but sources, Hakriya v'haberachot b'lashon HaKodesh. It says everything that was recited was in Hebrew. Sheneimar tikra et haTorah hazot, b'lashona. So everything was in Hebrew. Okay, so now, let's say I don't speak Hebrew. Did I have to be there? Even though there were people who don't speak Hebrew, or converts, or strangers who just don't understand anything, they needed to be there, present, and involved, just like when the Torah was given at Sinai. But he says, not only just like it was given at Sinai, and he's citing from Lashon of Hachamim on this matter, but it needs to be with the awe and trepidation and fear and appropriate seriousness as reception of Torah at Sinai. In short, there needs to be an experience. The description of Hakel is one in which it's not just cognitively cognitive growth, but it's an experiential situation in which the people walk away with some sort of connection, with some sort of inspiration. Is that Talmud Torah? Well, it seems like it is. How could that be Talmud Torah? Because Talmud Torah seems to be defined here with our paradigm of Matan Torah as more than just a cognitive endeavor, but one in which the person walks away with an experience. Matan Torah seems to be our paradigm for this matter, certainly according to Harambam on this. I just recently I saw it in Gershom Sholem. He cites from one of the Hasidic masters. Now, this is Hasidic, so don't overdo it, but I think the concept is a rich one and has depth to it. So this is what, I forgot which one. One of the Hasidic masters argues that Am Yisrael heard just the Aleph of Anochi, and they got frightened, and they didn't want to listen, and they didn't listen to anymore, and that was it. Just the Aleph of Anochi. Now, an Aleph of Anochi is meaningless, points out this Hasidic master. Was they heard nothing, and their experience was one in which they were changed completely from hearing, quote-unquote, the voice of God. But I think the depth to that is, this was a transformative experience because of just that, the experience. It was they came away imbued with a different understanding and perception and so forth, and it would be and will be forever known as Talmud Torah because of that experience. Yes, Avi?
I just want to take 2 steps back. And, we are trying to define the role of philosophy and what it's really in halakha.
I want to mesh the two. That's what I like to do.
I'm just thinking, what was the initial purpose of the Chachamim? Just give you one bracha in the morning and not the doing it multiple times during the day.
I'm working on that. Yeah, go ahead.
Just thinking.
If you think that I haven't been working on that, I have. Yeah, that's what it says.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Maybe it was just a practical approach. It was nothing philosophical about it. It was just it's a beracha mirabana.
But why distinguish? But I want a cohesion. I, as does Tosafot and many others, want a cohesion within their system. So if they tell me to make separate berachot for sisit and tefillin, they don't for Talmud Torah. There's got to be something there. We assume there's something there. It's not an arbitrary decision. So this is all an attempt to explain it.
Why are you taking a specific mitzvah like Hakil and saying that it's Talmud Torah?
Point taken. So says David, maybe Hakil was not about Talmud Torah. Maybe it was specific.
Would you have a problem?
One sec, bro. What?
If you take the tzitzit,
yeah.
You know, there's a machloket because Chama Yosef now says, don't do it again, but the Shulchan Aruch, you do it every time.
I know.
So, I mean, is it really wrong to say Bechata Torah, like multiple times during the day?
Yes.
Would be a Bechata Batala?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes.
But we say it before we go on. We say Bechata Torah before we have an Aliyah.
Different reasons. Yeah, Ronnie.
Would this all be a question if everybody said the Beracha La'asok B'divrei Torah?
Why not? If everyone said La'asok B'divrei Torah, would this be a question? Why not? Of course.
Because La'asok means whether you're learning physically, whether you're dealing in business, whether you're having interpersonal...
Maybe. In other words, maybe this will all just amount to that. But who said? Maybe La'asok means to toil in it.
Al B'divrei Torah seems to say only learning.
Maybe.
And if I break from the learning, your question is a valid question. See, la'asok, not so valid.
That's your definition of la'asok. You're assuming la'asok means my endeavors outside of Torah. La'asok b'divrei Torah could mean narrowly in the toil in the words of the actual Torah. So people do oftentimes like to draw a distinction between those two berachot and words. I don't know.
And then, wouldn't you apply this to other mitzvot then as well? So like you gave the example before of Sukkah, right?
Yeah.
Like on Sukkot, even more so than like a regular, day with Torah, in my mind I'm thinking, where's the nearest Sukkah, it's Sukkot today, I need to do this, I need to do this. Meaning that sort of latent experience is
so you want to argue
in your head the entire time.
But the mitzvah is not about an awareness.
Oh, now we said the mitzvah is not about the awareness. Okay.
I'm not so bothered by that. As I hear, just to bring it further, so I did it from Hakel, and I'm suggesting that that's the concept of not understanding because of the experience. Rabbi Soloveitchik does it in several other contexts. Listen to how he does it in this book, right? Ubi kashte misham, and from there you shall seek. The purpose of reading the Torah aloud in the synagogue is not solely to teach the congregation, but also to arrange an encounter with God, as experienced by our ancestors at Mount Sinai. Every act of reading from the Torah is a new giving of the Torah, a revival of the one stand at the foot of the flaming mountain. The reading of the Torah is the staging of the giving of Torah and the renewal of the awesome, sublime experience. The revelational experience is reenacted whenever the Torah is removed from the ark. Okay, so he's made a statement. Has he proved it? Not yet, but he has several applications. Says, firstly, Maharami Rotenberg. He says, Maharami Rotenberg was makpid al pi halacha, that everyone be standing during the time of Kriyat HaTorah. Why does everyone have to stand during the time? Because it's Matan Torah, because we're supposed to be reenacting Matan Torah. In fact, the next proof, and I just put in an ellipsis, I heard for the first time, I'll tell you the context, let me tell you the next proof first. He's got an interesting take on this. He says, Sfaradim certainly do it. We have what's called Ta'am Elyon. When you read from Aseret HaDeberot or Aseret HaDevarim, as opposed to the way you read the Ta'amim through the rest of the Torah, they're split up differently. There's a separate type of Ta'amim when you read Aseret. And whereas we have Sof Pasuk, if you look in a Humash, when you hear someone read from Aseret HaDeberot, there's no Sof Pasuk there. So when, or there's more Sof Pasuks. If you look at Ta'am Elyon, what's happening is they're split into the 10 Deberot. When we read Sefer Torah, Aseret Deberot, we don't read it the way it would be in the Humash, but rather we read it as if we're hearing 10 separate statements. Argues Rabbi Soloveitchik, you want to know what's going on in that circumstance? We are reenacting Matan Torah. Because we're reenacting it by reading it exactly the way these 10 Deberot were uttered to the nation at that time. See, here's the way I heard it initially. Apparently Rabbi Soloveitchik extended it further. He had nice catch on something. But I heard this general. I heard it in the home of his name was Rabbi David Hellman or Rabbi David Hellman. My wife was in America. I was in Yeshivat Mir at the time, and so since she was in America, I was a bachelor on Shabbat. So I decided I was going to get the bachelor experience. I stayed in the yeshiva for Shabbat, and I went to different rabbis' houses and things like that. So I went to Rabbi Hellman for Se'udah Shilishit. And Rabbi Hellman Se'udah Shilishit must have been Parashat Yitro or something like that. So he's saying Devrei Torah, and so he says, "I want to tell you another Shtikl Torah." He says, "It's from an Adam Gadol." He says, "From someone great." And then he says, "Devrei Torah." So I said right away, this has to be Rabbi Soloveitchik. In other words, he's quoting it from an Adam Gadol. Must be. If he won't say his name, and sure enough, you know, this is from Rabbi Soloveitchik. So that's the first time I heard it before. You know, I was familiar with it from his text. He continues Rabbi Soloveitchik in this context, though, of Ubikashtei Misham. He says, the Gemara is Doresh Halachot from the following Pesukim in the Torah. It's Gemara Masichet Berachot, Gemara Masichet Kiddushin. The Pesukim in the Torah say, V'hoda'atam levanecha v'vnei banecha. Yom asher amadta lifnei Adonai Elohecha b'chorev. You should teach your children, and then it continues, the day on which you stood at Har Sinai. The simple interpretation of the Pesukim is, what do you teach your children? Matan Torah. Describe to them what happened at Matan Torah. We should have a continuous masoret on what happened at Matan Torah. In fact, Ramban Nachmani, in his Mitzvot Sheshachach Harav, counts that as a mitzvah. You have to recall and remember and mention Matan Torah every year. It's not accepted by Harambam. The Gemara says, you want to know what this derasha means? This derasha means there's specific ways of learning Torah. So you have to have a certain cleanliness of body. As a result, men once upon a time were supposed to go to the mikveh more often in order to keep themselves clean in order to learn Torah appropriately. In short, Talmud Torah is defined al pi halacha, according to the Gemara, based on the paradigm of Matan Torah. And Matan Torah, it's hard to argue any differently than it having an experiential dimension. So Talmud Torah, as defined by its paradigm of Matan Torah at Har Sinai, in turn will have a certain breadth. It will be expansive. It won't just be the cognitive attainment, but rather will be the entire experience. Summed up best, I think, in this last source, right from this book by Ronnie Ziegler, when he's talking about the philosophy of Rabbi Soloveitchik. So here's what he says. In Revelation, which he's describing Talmud Torah as being a revelation of sorts, there are two components. The contents, i.e. the actual message, namely the halakha, and the experience. Both aspects are crucial. You need both. When I have revelation from God, I need content. What's God saying to me? But I also need the experience. He says, and the Rav, that's Rabbi Soloveitchik, finds it necessary to stress each. Against those who accuse the briskers of cold intellectualism, the Rav expounds the vital experiential aspect of Talmud Torah. So it's not just intellectual. Against those like Martin Buber, who focus only on the experience of the encounter while ignoring the contents of the revelation, he insists on the indispensability and the centrality of the study and practice of the Torah. In other words, he has both ends of it. What's he referring to with Martin Buber over here? Martin Buber notoriously was of the opinion that we search and we seek this relationship with God, which is an I-Thou relationship, which he describes at great length in his book, I-Thou. In the last portion of the book, he has an all-out assault on halakha. He says, you're trying to find a relationship which is depth to it, and you're defining it by defined laws and specific structure and strictures in which you're going to go about establishing that. He says, that's ridiculous. It needs to be spontaneous. It needs to have a reciprocity, which is something that can't be defined, put to words, and so forth. And in turn, Rabbi Soloveitchik, countering that sort of conception, says, what are you talking about? This is revelation. Revelation, did you ever hear of a prophet just experiencing? There's no such thing as just experience. There has to be a certain content to it. So in short, to put it all together, the question and the initial issue that we were dealing with is, so what is Talmud Torah? How are we to define Talmud Torah? Why is it that we don't say a bracha every time we engage in Torah? So Tosafot has this somewhat fluffy answer in which they say, well, there's a concept of being involved with it constantly. And as such, it's different than other misfot. But what do you mean? Sisitim tefillin are the same way. What we worked to develop through Rav Huttner, who didn't fully explain it, but then was supplemented in my mind by Rabbi Soloveitchik, is that there's an experiential dimension to Talmud Torah, which means it's not just, and the definition of Talmud over here is not just about the cognitive apprehension, but it's also about, well, what I came away with, what I went through in order to get there. And as such, I can expand it further and say, well, even the latent recognition, even the part where I'm not acutely aware of what I'm studying or what I'm thinking at that moment, well, that will be included in Talmud Torah as well. He brought support, Rabbi Rav Huttner, from that Rashi, from the Gemara Masechim Menachot, where the Shevira of the Luchot, where the Esek and the other Misvot, well, that was, to a certain extent or to a full extent, a Talmud. That was an upholding of Talmud Torah. In fact, I think that mashal is a wonderful mashal in terms of really demonstrating this. I mean, think about the circumstance. So Moshe comes down from this mountain with these luchot, and he looks at a people who didn't have luchot, and this is my understanding of the circumstance, and were involved in sinning because they didn't have that text. And he looks at them and he says, and this, again, this is my dirashah to end it, and he looks at them and he says that this is a travesty. This isn't, Torah isn't about these luchot. Well, Torah is about being able to learn this and to understand and to be involved with it, even when you don't have these luchot. So his destruction is getting across that concept to them. The concept being, you don't need to read it or be involved acutely in terms of its awareness. Even that latent awareness is, by definition, Talmud Torah as well. Yes, probably.